Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Honda dealers.
Huh? And boom! Why should anybody aspire to be a common man, an average man? Do you realize what it means to be average? That means you're the best of the lousiest. And the lousiest of the best. Now if we demand more and more for producing less and less, while the have-not nations encourage and inspire and indeed require hard work and maximum effort, if we deify the common men while they encourage and reward the uncommon ones, well, the end result of such a lopsided race as that is too obvious to require elaboration.
I mean, it's like, hello?
Out of hundreds of deals that I've done...
Hundreds.
I'm a fraud.
Yes.
Well, I read the USA Today, and I read the New York Times, and I read those both every day, and I listen to music. It wouldn't do me any good to listen to talk shows, because what's great about America, everybody has an opinion, you know what I mean? But what's also great about America, you don't have to listen to them, and that's the great part.
Lowercase d's.
You stay classy, San Diego.
What a snag!
I'm so scared. I wish I had a ham sandwich to calm my nerves.
Border battle! Yes!
No! Stop!
I've seen enough out of Cousins, Paul. Put him on ice.
And he's loose!
I'm going to say something about depression.
That's interesting.
Jet lag disadvantage.
Nuts and bolts, we got screwed.
Time for two more questions, guys.
A dog with a note in his mouth should be able to sell those ratings.
Mark, they can't pitch. They can't hit. What is with? I mean, come on.
He's the clown from Brown. He's the fourth in the North. This is the common man, Dan Cole.
And the 2003 City Pages Gadfly of the Year. I'm not even sure if they hand out the Gadfly of the Year award anymore. We've looked it up before, Tenneby, the definition, so no need to do it now. Gadfly, a picture of me. And then the second definition is someone who is persistently annoying. And that's what I do. And every day I get up and say, who will be my target today? But remember, it's all good natured. It's all in fun, at least from my end of it. I think it's fun. It's all good natured. Some people take umbrage with my teasing and my cajoling. Teddy B, have you ever used the word umbrage in a sentence before? You're not even familiar with the word, are you?
I used to wear Umbro shorts.
Umbrage.
When I was younger.
U-M-B-R-A-G-E. See if I've used it correctly. People would take umbrage. Some people take umbrage with my cajoling, my teasing, and my gadfly-iness.
Umbrage.
Offense, annoyance, displeasure?
Yeah, some people take annoyance and displeasure with my with my cajoling. Today's target was LaVell O'Neal III. Well, you read it, didn't you? It's not the first place I've seen it, but he picked up on it. And he really didn't say it, but I'm hoping that the PST committee, if you still want to be if you want to, put the PST committee together, because it doesn't seem like you really care much about it anymore. I mean, that you don't put, there's not a good song, that should have won. There's never been a good song with a harmonica in it, should have won the Preposterous Statement Tournament, whatever year that was. But what is the day today? Did I even bring my fish wrap?
Tuesday, April 2nd.
Think about this. Do you remember when we were, just within the last couple of years, the Local 9 was desperately seeking Susan? We needed a catcher so bad, we had nobody to be behind the plate. Once Maurer left,
yep.
What were we going to do? We couldn't find anybody who could hit, anybody who could catch, anybody who could throw out base runners. And now...
anyone could frame pitches.
Frame pitches. Now we got three guys. We don't even know what to do. We have too many catchers. You saw the story, did you? Three's a crowd. Twins trying to find balance behind the plate with a trio of backstops. We have... It's an embarrassment of riches in the catcher position. Now, you know what I'd do? I'd package one of those catchers and try to get a starting pitcher. Maybe some help in the bullpen. That, instead of worrying about how to play all three, I'd trade one or two of them.
That's what I do, and I'd have a surplus.
Well, that's
out of position.
What I do. But I guess we you know, I'm not Baldelli, I'm not Falvey and Levine, and I'm not a Sabermetrics advanced analytics guy. Like when they say advanced, like look, this is well beyond your pay grade. This is advanced analytics. Oh,
it's like when you're a senior writer or a senior reporter.
Exactly. I'm a senior gadfly.
Yeah.
So. They talk about it's a LaBelle E'Neill, the third penned story. Jason Castro, Mitch Garver. And I don't know, is that a misprint? Is his name Williams or Williams? Is it Williams?
It is, yeah, it does have an N.
Okay, Williams, is it, do you say Astudillo?
Astudillo.
Or do you say Astudillo?
I'm an Astudillo guy.
I'll be an Astudillo guy, too. Let's agree on that one. Astudillo guy. 27-year-old Venezuelan fan favorite. Is a high-energy free swinger. It means he doesn't have plate discipline. But that's at least that's what the old-school guys would say. But now he's free swinging. See, you're trying to paint it as a positive. He's a free swinger. And maybe the free swinging works because here
it
is. He
didn't strike out.
Well, here it is in the fish wrap today. Astudillo, 27, is with his third organization and continues to defy logic with his unwillingness to walk or strike out. He was 2-for-2 with two doubles, two RBI. Notice he went with RBI instead of RBIs. It's starting to catch on to him. You're changing. Forget about the change of the way we approach baseball when we only worried about home runs, RBI, and batting average. Now we worry about war, ops, and everything else. People are now starting to come around to your way of thinking. And they call it RBI instead of RBIs. He was 2-for-2 with two doubles, two RBI, and two runs scored Sunday. Through 101 big league plate appearances, Astudillo is hitting .368, the highest career batting average for any player with at least 100 plate appearances. Some guy named Ty Cobb is next at .366. We're comparing a guy. Now think about this. We're comparing a guy's success at the plate who's had how many plate appearances he had? 101 with Tyrus Raymond Cobb. I even know his full name. I mean, if you know a guy's full name, he's, I mean, like, do you know Wayne Gretzky's, you must know J.P. Parisi's, Zach Parisi's full name. Because if you're in awe of somebody, you know their full name, right? Either that, or they're a serial killer, or a would-be assassin.
Yeah.
Because we know those people by all three names. It just seems like it's that way all the time. Tyrus Raymond Cobb, a.k.a. the Georgia Peach, one of the inaugural members of the Hall of Fame. When they first did the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, I think it was 1934, I believe. Maybe you could look that up. And they had five members. They were Babe Ruth, Walter Big Train Johnson, Christy Mathewson, Honus Wagner, and the Georgia Peach, Tyrus Raymond Cobb. Did I get all five correct?
Is it 1936.
36 it was.
Okay. Ty Cobb, Walter Johnson, Christy Mathewson, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner.
Right. Astudillo has been compared now to Tyrus Raymond Cobb. It's just...
You've got to be kidding
me. And he can't crack the lineup.
Wait, and he can't crack the lineup. We got him catching every third day. He's not even our regular catcher. A guy that has the highest batting average. The highest batting average of anybody with 100 plate appearances aboard Major League Baseball on his way to Canton, to the Hall of Fame, and he can't crack our lineup every day. That's how deep we are. And he's a fan favorite, which is always important. We've had a lot of fan favorites in these towns, and a lot of times the fan favorites, they usually flame out pretty early, right? Because usually they're quirky about stuff. There's something about them that's quirky, and that's why we love them. And we love them for things other than their ability to play, because usually it's not their ability to play we like, it's their quirkiness.
Yes.
It's their...
And Acevedo has some quirkiness to him.
But he also has Ty Cobb type. And think about it. No discipline at the plate. Just swings at everything. This guy might
But he doesn't strike out. So
this guy might go down as the greatest baseball player that ever lived. Because Ty Cobb, you could make,
you can make
an
the argument.
He's the greatest player to ever live. I mean, his career batting average is 3.6. Think about now. You go dead ball era. Things were different back then. I get all that. But to still to have the how many years did Ty Cobb play? He was my favorite player for the longest time until he was surpassed by Al Kaline. Because Al Kaline, I don't want to say he was a contemporary of mine, but he was playing when baseball meant the most to me, and that was in my single digit years, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then early. It was about 13, 14 years old when I stopped paying as close attention to baseball as I once did. But Al Kaline was my guy.
He played from 1905 to 1928. Okay. And basically all of them with the same team. He played with Detroit from the age of 18 to the age of 39.
Okay.
And he played his last years with Philadelphia
Athletics. And his career batting average, .368.
12 batting titles.
12 batting
titles. Won the batting title 12 times.
12 times. He held the major league record for stolen bases until it was broken by, was it Maury Wills or Lou Brock who broke the record? I think it was Maury Wills. And maybe Lou Brock broke Maury Wills' record. I don't remember.
He had 96 steals in one season?
Yes. That was the record forever.
It was amazing.
96 in one season. Back then, it wasn't even close. It was like Ruth to home runs. Cobb was to stealing bases. You know what they used to say about Cobb? Legend was he would sharpen his spikes on his cleats because he liked to go spikes up and cut the other guy's leg. That's how they play. You know what the Detroit Tigers saying was that? That's how we baseball. That was their slogan. They said, that's how we baseball. We sharpen our spikes.
He won a batting title at the age of 20.
Mm-hmm.
He was hitting .316 as a 19-year-old.
And we've got our own version of him right here in Minnesota.
And we don't have enough chest protectors to go around.
Think about it. We don't have enough chest protectors or face masks to go around. That's how deep and that's how much our franchise has changed since Paul V. Levine came on board. Did he not compare him to Ty Cobb? I mean, that... You can say he didn't, but all I know is this is how it was written. Acevedo is hitting .368, the highest batting average for any player with at least 100 plate appearances. Some guy named Ty Cobb is next at .366. He's comparing him to Ty Cobb. There's no other way to interpret that. So, of course, I wake up this morning after reading that. I dash to my phone, right? And I write, two texts. The first one's at 6:54. Maybe he's still sleeping. It's amazing. It's been years since the Twins had a reliable catcher. And now we not only have one, we not only have two, but we have three. It's an embarrassment of riches at backstop. Get no response. So 4 minutes later, I go, you compared Williams Astudillo to Ty Cobb. Tyrus Raymond Cobb, the Georgia Peach, one of the inaugural Hall of Fame cast of five. It took a while, but Lavelle Neal III finally got back to me. He texts, that stat's been written to other publications since the end of Sunday's game. Well, just because other people are making the comparison to Ty Cobb doesn't mean you have to do it as well. This is preposterous. It's Ty Cobb. I'm going to start. I wish he was from Georgia, not Venezuela, so we could call him the Georgia Peach. How about the Venezuelan?
Should we find out what language do they speak in Venezuela?
I would think Spanish would be my guess.
We should find what Peaches in Spanish, and we can call him that.
Well, I would like something that rhymes with a V, because he's from Venezuela. Yeah. What kind of food rhymes with a V? Is there a fruit?
Venison?
He's the Venezuelan venison. That's what he is. He is kind of meaty. He's the Venezuelan venison. We got him here! And you can see him. You can't see him this week. You can see him on TV. You can't see him in person until they return. We're out of town because of the Final Four, which is a detriment to us. Here's what I love about baseball. They contradict themselves constantly. I'll prove it to you on the other side of the break on the Common Man program here on the Fan.
It's the afternoon buffoon at at noon. This is the Common Man, Dan Cole, on the Fan.
Time for the National Cash Contest. All you have to do is listen to the Fan every hour for the keyword and your shot to put a grand in your hand. This hour, your keyword is super. So text the keyword super to 200-200 to enter. Standard text messaging and data rates may apply. Keyword is super. Text it to 200-200.
Someone's telling me that maybe, you know, and someone said, oh, just like Georgia Peach rhymes. Well, I didn't say it had to. I just say I prefer the alliterations. I just do. I know the Georgia Peach, Ty Cobb. No, I know that doesn't rhyme or doesn't have the alliteration. But that's just what I was looking for. I mean, another people are considering the Venezuelan avocado. The Venezuelan avocado, which okay. I kind of like because I guess yeah. avocados are popular in Venezuela. So are papayas, the Venezuelan papaya.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
That's not bad.
That's got a nice ring to it. Maury Amsterdam guy tells me that a peach in Spanish is durazno.
Durazno?
Durazno. The Venezuelan durazno. What town is he from in Venezuela? That might
we'll
help,
to find
too.
Out.
We need to find out those things. That's what we need to do. Another story I stumbled across, and again, it was a Lavelle E. Neal III penned story. This comes from, it's the second today, so this is like 3 days ago, 4 days ago. This is March 30th. Here's the headline from the Fish Wrap
Factory. He's from Barcelona, Venezuela.
Barcelona. The Barcelona barleycorn. No. The Barcelona, help me. It must be a fruit or a vegetable. It starts with a B. It's got to be somewhere, right?
Blueberry, blackberry.
Ah, there you go. The Barcelona blueberry. I like it. Here's the headline, Tenby. Early season off days present a challenge to twins.
Either you've got to be kidding me.
They don't have enough off days. Remember, that's been the complaint by Major League Baseball players for years now. We don't have enough days off. We're playing 6-7 days a week sometimes. We get 1 day off a month, and all they do is show up at the ballpark, get in the, hit a little batting practice, play a little fungo, play a little pepper, right? Then they play a game, which by definition, when you're able to play 162 games a year, it means it doesn't take a lot out of you physically. It takes nothing out of you. And then when you're done, you have a buffet waiting for you. You have hot tubs, cold tubs, massage therapists, you know, five-star hotels, first-class travel. But they still complain. Now that they have the days off, there's too many days off for them. Yeah. What do they want? What do they want? Do they want to just play whenever they want? So they say, I'd like to have a week off this week. And, you know, I'd like to play 6-7 days in a row after that. Maybe a couple of days off. I mean, that's just how it works.
And that happens in every sport.
It happens in every sport.
In my sport, they do it all the time. If they have to play 3 games in 4 nights, they complain about how taxing that is. And then if they have a 4-day break, they say, well, got some rust. It's a little hard to get right back into it. Basically, they're just excuses for loser teams.
I think it is. I think that's what it is. Now, this was a little bit out of the ordinary because of the Final Four, so the Twins had to be ushered out of town.
Yeah.
And Major League Baseball said that's the way it goes. You know, you got to be ushered out of town. The manager says it's a unique situation. Our first couple of weeks make you think a lot. Eggs Odorizzi had a thought. I think it's a waste of off days. We don't really need them because it's early in the year. They're rare one to go. They've been on a routine, and they'd rather have them toward the end. Matter of fact, that's pointed out by, I think it's Jason Castro, one of our three great catchers. He says, it was obviously not a standard weather season. He said of 2018, remember last year they had some postponements? He said, when you have to work around that, it makes it tough. Having those off days early at least gives you flexibility, but still you'd rather have them later on. which I guess. Then Baldelli says, we will adjust. We'll be fine. We'll figure it out and find ways to play well despite it. It does force you to spend a lot of energy figuring out how you're going to maneuver around five off days. But we will do it, and we'll be okay. It's a lot of energy trying to figure out how do we do this? What are we going to do? It's like these are called Woodbury problems that the Major League Baseball players are. But I just found it interesting that it was like it's either there's too many days. It's almost like they're the Minnesota Goldilockses. You know, it's either, you know, this bed's too hard, this bed's too soft, this one's just right. This porridge is too hot, this porridge is too cold, this is just right. They just want this just right schedule. And it's like, I mean, as far as the catcher position goes, I can understand when you're trying to play three guys behind the plate and you have all those off days, catcher's only going to be able to play once every couple of weeks. So, but the Twins continue tonight. Now, last night, the three-time division champion Cleveland Indians got back on track. They win a game. They go to 2-2. So I know that a lot of the Polat pocket protectors were already. I guess what I'm trying to say is rumors of Cleveland's demise, I think, have been greatly exaggerated because after that three-game series, people were already writing off Cleveland.
Yes.
They were writing them off.
Which is dangerous for that starting rotation.
Right. And saying, look, this lineup, they lost a couple of good bats. A couple of good bats are injured, right? So they're getting a couple of players back if they recover from these injuries, right? And those are some key players. So I'm not ready to write off the Tribe just yet. And Kansas City's off to a nice start. Now, I think their victories were over the lowly. Everybody's lowly in our division, though, right? Kansas City's lowly. Chicago's lowly. Detroit is lowly. They should just call them the Detroit lowlies or the Chicago lowlies or the Kansas City lowlies because I've been told this is, again, this might be the worst division in all of baseball. And that very well could be. I mean, again, if you look at past performance, expected performance, the rosters, this, that, lat, it might very well be. That's why the Twins, most people are going, by default, they're going to finish second. And then there were some of those, including Mark Rosen and other national publications, that actually picked the Twins to win the division. And they very well could. They're off to a nice start. The kid we're facing tonight also had a brilliant
seven scoreless innings.
He had seven scoreless innings. So is it Berríos going tonight?
Yes.
So here we go.
Ace versus ace.
Ace versus ace in Kansas City.
We are coming off a day off, so you need to factor that for the Twins.
And then we had another day off before that because we had this. So we're, you know, I don't know, are we out of our routine or not out of our element? I will say this. I'm still not ready to watch a game yet. It's going to take a while, okay? I mean, that's before I start saying, you know what?
I always love that one.
Time marches on for everybody, Tenneby. Time is something that you can't get back, right? If you invest an hour and a half in tonight's Twins game, you can't get that hour and a half back. That might be a nice investment for some people. For me, it's not quite. I want to invest one I know is worth investing in, and I'm not sure it is yet. Because even you could say, but they're in first place right now. Yeah, but if it ends up spiraling out of control, and I look back and go, I spent a grand total, if I put it all together, a week and a half watching Twins baseball. Right? Because think about that. If you watch an entire game on average 3 hours, it takes eight games, and that's one day. One day of your life spent watching a team that ended up not going anywhere. And I don't know, when you're 60 like me, those hours become very precious to you. And watching a terrible team in a terrible city with terrible fans at a terrible stadium becomes something I'd really rather not do. But I will say the team's got my curiosity piqued with the nice start. Now, I did like the Cleveland manager, see his quotes? Convenient for him starting out the way they did, though they won. Had Cleveland lost again, I would have rolled my eyes, shrugged my shoulders, and shook my head because it would have sounded more like excuse computer. But I don't know if you saw Cleveland managers. And I thought of this too, as well, Timothy. He says, where is it? It's not in here. The quote's not in this story. I saw a story where he basically said, it's cold right now. Everything will catch up and everybody will be better.
Sure.
Now, again, it is an excuse. It's like, well, everybody's got to play in the cold, so just play better than the other team. These games mean as much. But right now, we're not, with the cold weather, I don't think we're really seeing the pitchers the way they should be and the hitters the way they should be. So it is good to take advantage of your cold weather games early and win them like the Twins have done so far. At least gone 2-1 at this point. But They've piqued my curiosity, Tenneby. I like the way I like this club. I might want to get to know them before things are all said and done. Now, should we talk about the commander in chief? Or I mean, the commander in chief. We'll do that other side of the break. It's the Common Man program right here on the Fan. On the Fan.
Dan Cole, the Common Man. Weekdays at noon on the Fan.
A Fan.
Hey, basketball fans, T-Mobile has your chance to meet national basketball champion Sam Perkins. Join KFAN and meet us this Friday from 2 to 4 at the T-Mobile store in the Mall of America. We'll see you there. T-Mobile, America's network.
He's referred to now as the commander in chief rather than the commander in chief. It's a book that's. You said you'd heard this story already about the book. I had not. Yeah. I mean, it's making headlines everywhere. How did you know about it and the rest of us didn't?
How?
I don't know how you
social
found
media.
Out. Because. This book has just been released Tuesday. So today. So how you knew about it, I don't know. You must be in the loop. But the story I see
I heard about it weeks or months ago, so I'm sure, you know, even though the book isn't released yet, you throw out teasers ahead of time.
Well, Rick Riley has a new book. Rick Riley is a longtime sports, your whole life, just sports writer. That how many books do you think he's done? Who's the guy that's exhausted? Feinstein is the guy that's exhausted and can't get out of bed for 3 days. I wonder if Rick Riley's in the same boat or the same bet where he collapses from exhaustion and doesn't get out of bed for 3 days when it comes to book deadline time. But apparently he is, Rit Rat wrote a book. Commander in Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump. And there are quotes from all sorts of people that have played golf with Trump. None of this surprises you, does it? I guess it sort of kind of does, because, you know, you can cheat at a lot of other things in life, and you can do a little of this, a little of that, but golf is supposed to be the one place where you play the ball where it lies, and, you know, that's why golf is that one game where there really are no officials. Officials in the pro game, they're on the course, but they're not watching everything you do. They're just called in to say, hey, I think something happened here. I need a ruling here. But they're not watching. Like, they don't have striped shirts on with whistles hanging around their neck, right? Calling, that's generally a reserve for people watching on TV that call into the network and say, I saw this guy make a mistake. Rick Riley writes, to say Donald Trump cheats is like saying Michael Phelps swims. He cheats at the highest level. He cheats when people are watching, and he cheats when they aren't. He cheats whether you like it or not. He cheats because that's how he plays golf. If you're playing golf with him, he's going to cheat. Riley, a former Sports Illustrated columnist who has played with Trump in the past, spoke to dozens of players, both amateur and professional, to recount some of the president's worst cons on the course, starting with his declared 2.8 handicap. Have you seen him swing? There's no way. I had no idea he was claiming to be a 2.8.
Well, that's why when all the cheating stuff came out,
right,
it didn't surprise me, because I look at his age, I look at his body, I've seen his swing, and then I hear him say, I'm a 2.8. I didn't believe it from that very second.
We call that a vanity handicap. And there are people out there that are vanity handicap people, right? They like to have a better handicap so that people think, wow, you're a really good golfer. They would rather have that than actually have the 10.8 or whatever and play to that, which works against them if they're actually giving strokes. But apparently that's not what some... That's not what makes
Well, the handicap might be accurate if you're cheating the whole time.
Well, that's true. That's exactly right.
So if that's the way you were to play in a competition...
It says, in layman's term, the lower the handicap, the better the player. Jack Nicklaus, winner of 18 major golf titles and generally considered the greatest golfer in the history of the game, has a handicap of 3.4 right now. Nicklaus handicap is listed on the same golf handicap and information network website used by Trump, where players post their scores. Riley writes, if Trump's is a 2.8, Queen Elizabeth is a pole vaulter. Really good line. I'd be exhausted just writing that line. Shortly after he became president, Trump played with Woods, Dustin Johnson, and veteran PGA Tour pro Brad Faxon. Given the quality and profile of his companions, you might have thought Trump would have been on his best behavior. Not so. On one hole, Trump dunked a shot into the lake, but his opponents weren't looking. He simply dropped another ball, then hit that into the water, too. Faxon recalls, this is a quote from Faxon, so he drives up and drops where he should have dropped the first time and hits it on the green. The actor Samuel L. Jackson has also witnessed the underhanded methods. Here's what Samuel L. Jackson said. We clearly saw him hook a ball into the lake at Trump National, and his caddy told him he found it. Boxer Oscar De La Hoya and rocker Alice Cooper have also seen the same shenanigans firsthand. While LPGA player Suzanne Pedersen, another victim, thinks it's all down to his caddy since, quote, no matter how far into the woods he hits the ball, it's always in the middle of the fairway when we get there.
Does
the caddy like run up ahead of time or what?
Four caddies, yeah. And Trump doesn't just tamper with his own balls. During a game with Mike Tirico before Trump was elected, the former ESPN football announcer hit the shot of his life, a 230-yard three-wood towards an elevated green he couldn't see, but he knew it was close. When he got to the putting green, however, Tirico's ball was nowhere to be seen. Instead, it was 50 feet left of the hole in a bunker. It made no sense until Trump's caddy caught up with him after the round. Tirico says, Trump's caddy came up to me and said, you know that shot you hit on the par five? It was 10 feet from the hole. Trump threw it in the bunker. I watched him do it.
You've got to be kidding me.
Even Trump's golf courses lie. As the owner of 14 golf clubs and with his name on another five, Trump has, according to Riley, been known to wildly exaggerate their standing and course rankings, overvalue them, and even play fast and loose with their locations. And it just, the story goes on and on and on. And, this story closes by saying quite why Trump cheats is another matter. He is by all accounts a very good golfer for his age, but seems incapable of playing by the rules. Does he even care? To that, Riley offers a simple reply. Golf is like bicycle shirts. It reveals a lot about a man.
Another good line.
It's a good line. And it is sad, really. I mean, again, you can think what you want about Trump, about his politics, his behavior, boorish in many cases. You may love him, may support him and want to vote for him again. That's up to you. It doesn't matter to me either way. I don't vote for any real candidates anymore. It doesn't matter who's running from any party. I write in either politicians that have come and gone and are dead. I'll write them in. I've written in Monday Night Football guy, Maury Amsterdam guy, Larry Mandela guy. I might even write in you, Tana B, next time. And not Landon, I'll write in Tana B. But a guy, and this doesn't surprise me, though. And it's just, I don't understand why people, what are you gaining from it? Because you know for me, the issue is you know yourself, right? You see what I'm saying? I mean, not only are you cheating your opponents, but then you know yourself deep down. I didn't make
how can you feel good about that?
I don't know. I don't know how you can feel good about that. I don't know why.
It's one thing to like cheat your own ball and cheat your own score.
Right.
But when you start picking up someone else's ball and throw it in the bunker,
yeah,
that's a whole nother level.
Yeah. And I don't think the caddy would make it up. My guess is the chief executive would say it's fake news. He would say these people are making it up. And I'm
trying to make money off a book.
I'm sure most of his ardent supporters will believe it. That think he's never done such a thing, which that's how you feel. If you want, there are people that are they're robotized. They're like robots, right? They will believe anything. And same with people with Obama. There are people that believe everything Obama's ever said and everything Trump. You know, people idolize and pedestalize politicians just like they do athletes, actors, actresses, and musicians. Apparently, is this brand new today? Rick Riley. Tweeted, and he directed it toward, how do they call that? A direct tweet? What's it called?
Yeah, he just tweeted at him.
when he tweeted
at Donald Trump,
he said, "Hey, at real Donald Trump, I told this AP reporter I'd take you on for 18 holes for $100,000, as long as we both had rules officials with us and you don't get to use one of your cheating caddies. You game?" No response from the chief executive yet. No response from him. Riley, for what it's worth, says if he were to win, he would donate his money to a charity. My guess is Riley would trounce him, but maybe not.
Must be a good golfer to want to put $100,000
on the line. Here's what I'll tell you. When Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods did the pay-for-TV thing, I had zero interest in watching and didn't watch a shot of it. If Trump and Riley were to play in a match, I would even think about this. For that match, even if baby brother Peter had an AAU game, I'd have to tell baby brother Peter, I'm sorry, man.
Oh, my gosh. Above average at that.
It would be the biggest pay-per-view over any boxing match.
It'd be the biggest pay-per-view event in the history of pay-per-view events. But it will never happen, right?
No, he won't even respond.
Because he won't do it because he knows he can't beat Riley without cheating and he couldn't take the embarrassment of hitting. I'm sure he hits a lot of terrible shots.
I mean, Trump's going to get ripped either way, right? If he says nothing, then you're the coward who's afraid to face him. If you say, "Hey, I'll go ahead and play golf against you," then you've got the lunatic liberals going, "Don't you have better things to do with your presidential time?" I mean, it's a no-win situation.
No, I think the lunatic liberals would love it because they would think Riley's going to win.
Catch him cheating.
It would be the one time they've beaten Trump because they've lost to Trump and everything else, right? They lost him in the election. They've lost him with the wall. They've lost him with collusion. He's won everywhere. He's the Teflon Don. So this would be the one time because, if there are people watching, right, and not Secret Service guys only, but people
are they going to have a gallery there?
I don't know. Where they would have neutral parties watching, and maybe Trump would win because, as the story says, by all accounts, he can play a little bit. If I'm Trump, I take him on. I'll say, all right.
Because you can only cheat so much, right? You can't go from like a 13 handicap like me down to a 2. I mean, you can't cheat that much.
Right. I would
say. So you still got to be a somewhat competent
golfer.
And
what kind of, can you look up Riley's USGA handicap? Look up Rick Riley and see what his USGA handicap. Now, Trump says he's a 2.3. None of us believe that. He's probably more like an 8, 9, 10. If they say he's a pretty good golfer, because apparently even Tiger Woods, and whether Woods was just being kind, because there's a quote from Woods that says he's a pretty good golfer. I was kind of impressed. I was surprised he could play that well. But my guess is Trump's probably, I doubt he's a single-digit handicap, but let's say he is. So single-digit, I wonder what Rick Riley is. This could be a great matchup. I'd like to see Johnny Miller come out of retirement, because I like Johnny.
Yeah, put it on the Golf Channel.
Oh, Golf Channel? Put it on one of the major networks, NBC. There'd be a bidding war for it. It would get better ratings than the back nine of the Masters on Sunday, right? Trump versus Riley.
It might be the highest rated sporting event of all time. This is like Super Bowl.
And here's
level.
What Trump could do. He could say, "I'll do it if the proceeds from the pay-per-view pay for that wall, as long as Mexico won't." Because that would be enough to pay for the wall. I'll lay down $50. I'll go $49.99.
Sure.
I'd probably go $89. I might even go $100, a C-note. It's almost name your price. It would be can't miss TV. You could pay for the wall. If enough people, and I think people would, it would be the biggest pay-per-view event in the history of pay-per-view. It would outdistance McGregor versus Mayweather. Is that the biggest pay-per-view event ever? McGregor versus Mayweather? I don't remember if that was. It would make those, they would pale in comparison. So I'm all for it. Riley versus the Donald. Tenby, when we come back, we'll do a little bit of 5-3-4.
We will. Dinky Town is now a jelly-free zone.
The Common Man.
Scares you in some ways, or he can like fascinate you in others. Like, I don't understand how his brain works.
Weekdays at noon on The Fan. Fan.
Head on out to Bobby and Steve's Auto World in downtown Minneapolis from 3:30 to 6 o'clock on Friday as we tailgate for the final rounds of the College Hoops Tournament. Shoot some hoops with the fans Eric Nordquist for your shot at awesome prizes, including free gas cards from Bobby and Steve's. KFAN.com, keyword events.
Couple 13, 14 passed on the Fan. Were you ever able to find Rick Riley's USGA handicap index?
No, I did not.
Maybe someone out there that has some time on their hand might be just twiddling their thumbs. They could look for, because I think you can find anybody you want USGA handicap index. Look for one Rick Riley. Rick Riley, and see if his compares to that of the Commander-in-Chief, the Commander-in-Chief, which his handicap, was it 2.3 or 3.2?
2.8, I think.
Yeah, it was 2.8 because it was Nick. He's a better golfer than Jack Nicklaus is right now.
Think about that.
Donald Trump is a better golfer than
Jack Nicklaus. And how old is Jack Nicklaus?
I think he's 80-something. Trump's 10 years younger.
Jack Nicklaus is 79.
Oh, he's only 79? I thought he was 80-something. So he's, and Trump is 70 or 72. I think the Donald is 72.
Trump is 72. He's got 7 years on him.
So 7 years, maybe that's
that. Is there a big drop-off after 72?
I don't know. I mean, Jack really wasn't that good.
I haven't seen Rick Riley golf, but I would take Nicklaus against Trump now.
18 majors. Trump has won. Part of the story I saw, he claims to have won like 18 club championships.
How do we know Nicklaus wasn't cheating like Trump was?
Well, we don't.
Like back then, they didn't have the television camera set up.
We don't know. You don't know. Jack may have cheated too. Jack of all trades, as we like to call him. Let's go ahead and move along into 5-3-4.
Time now for 5 questions. Well, actually 3, but 5 sounds like more than 4. Brought to you by Green Mill Restaurant and Bar. Question number 1.
Riley's at 4.6.
4.6.
In-depth look at the state of the state of hockey.
I tend to be, I don't know about your value bets. I'll leave that up to you, but I'm taking the president. Riley's a 4.6. In the president, what was his again?
2.8.
Who's a better player? My guess is he'll have home course advantage. They'll play at
one of his properties.
Play at one of the Trump's properties. They'll be on property.
He'll know the holes.
I'm taking the chief.
I want to watch it.
I'm taking the executive in chief. I mean the executive in chief. We're doing wild here?
Zach Parise has missed the past 4 games with a lower body injury over the weekend. Bruce Boudreau called an injury significant. Yet, Parise was skating at practice yesterday at Tria Rink, also participated in the morning skate this morning. So, Common, given the Wild's place in the standings, should the Wild risk Parise tonight against the Winnipeg Jets?
No. I mean, isn't it like a 0.00004%? Yeah, it's like I don't get very deep into Wild stories anymore, but I think I saw a game or two ago in the Gamer afterwards where the coach did the old, fight to the end. He basically did the whole slogan from the Wild song. Yeah. Fight to the end, defend to the end, or whatever it is. And it's like, that sounds good. He has to.
Yeah.
But we know it's not. I mean, again, sports miracles or amazing, unheard of comebacks do occur. They do. But in this case, I know. And so I wouldn't play him. It's the same as didn't they shut LeBron down? And shutting LeBron down for the rest of the season, to me, is even more detrimental to the league and the team than shutting Parise down. Because I don't think in hockey, how many players do people pay money to watch play? Any? Ovechkin? Do people say, I've got to see Ovechkin playing Crosby? Is that about it?
McDavid.
In basketball, McDavid is overrated. But, people want to see LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see, back in the days, they loved seeing Kobe. Do you remember when Kobe played at the Metrodome?
I can't forget all the Kobe jerseys.
All those Kobe jerseys all over the Metrodome. Do you remember that?
I always love that one.
So people like to watch individual players. So if
it was a big deal every time Michael Jordan came here.
Well, sure enough, LeBron, let's say, I don't know what their schedule's like, but let's say the Lakers are playing in Portland tonight. Well, maybe that was the one game I bought tickets for because I want to watch LeBron. Now, luck of the draw, I get that. There's injuries, but shutting them down. But they've done it for LeBron, so I would shut Parisi down as well. I don't think there's any reason to play him. And even if the guy wants to play, I'd say, you know, what's the sense? What, you know, especially if you're not 100%. There are those who would say, you know, if you can rub a little Robitussin on it and play, then you should play. I'm not one of those guys. Sorry, I'm not. If you're, because it was, I remember, you know, the old, he's not the first person to say it, but I remember when Trevor Winter told me what Clem told him was basically, if you're hurt, you play. If you're injured, you don't. Well, yeah, and I know that sounds, you know, that's macho and all that, but if the team is absolutely going nowhere, and they're not going anywhere,
no.
I would not play him. I would not.
Question number two. Programming predicament.
The Minnesota Wild host the Winnipeg Jets tonight. That game is at 7 o'clock, and you can hear that game right here on the Fan Wild Fan Line with myself and Pat Micheletti after the game. While the Twins also play a 7 o'clock game, they are at Kansas City. So 2 7 o'clock starts. Common, what are you going to do about tonight's
programming predicament?
Tim, we have some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Hold on. The House Intelligence Committee is investigating if you can impeach someone for shaving strokes off your golf score. They're launching an investigation.
It's Mueller all over this one.
I guess. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, the last investigation didn't work out the way the lunatic liberals wanted it to. You know what? You know how they want to see the full, is it Mueller or Mueller?
Mueller.
They want to see the full Mueller report?
Yeah.
I want to see all of his scorecards. Let's see them. Let's look at those scorecards. What was your question?
Programming predicament. Wild versus Jets tonight, 7 o'clock. Twins at Kansas City, 7 o'clock. What are you going to do about games going at the same time?
What's on Animal Planet? Do you have any idea what's on Animal Planet? Yeah. Great station. Maybe it's the demise of the woolly mammoth or the demise of the mastodon would be a great viewing for 2 hours. I think they died because of the ice age, or was the opposite? Was it global warming or the ice age that killed the mastodon? I don't recall. I think they got frozen in the turf is what happened. A plugged lie in golf.
What's tonight at
7
o'clock. Northwoods Law, Protect and Preserve, Season 6.
See?
At 8 o'clock, Northwoods Law, Season 6.
What's Northwoods Law about, do you know?
Well, the 7 o'clock episode, with added facts, newly promoted Sergeant Lucas shows trainee Fry the ropes during a busy ATV weekend. Hannett attempts to rescue an injured heron and faces off with a moose. Lost hikers turn to Holmes for help as the sun goes down and temperatures drop.
Are we really using, is the federal government, are we using money to rescue blue herons, really? Is that what we're doing? So how much money was spent to rescue that blue heron? Or are these private parties doing this? Who's doing this? Are these real life stuff, or are these like sitcoms or some type of a drama?
It sounds like a reality show.
Yeah, it sounds like almost like a reality show. I still think my curiosity has peaked with Animal Planet. I opt for Animal Planet tonight for me.
Question number three. It's time now for the lowdown in Dinky Town.
Gopher sophomore point guard Isaiah Washington announced yesterday that he plans to transfer to another school. Washington averaged just 4.3 points, 2.8 assists this season. Of course, we remember him as a four-star recruit when he arrived in Minnesota in 2017. Common, what was your favorite jelly in Minnesota moment?
Well, when he was recruited, because I thought it was a great move. I think most of us were, I don't even think shocked or stunned is an exaggeration. When you're able to get, I mean, think of all the great players to come out of New York. And was he the state of New York's Mr. Basketball or the city of New York?
Yeah.
I mean, highly regarded, top recruit. I don't know what were those rankings? Did you just have the rankings? Four star, and he was ranked as, you know, was it like one of the, was he 17th best point guard of the nation or whatever it was? And I thought, wow, Patino's done,
I mean, my guess is we used up a lot of private jet miles on those recruits to convince them to come here. But I thought to myself, that's a great recruit, right? Those kind of kids just don't come to Minnesota. And then he's basically been just a non-factor, you know, talking to people and reading things. Apparently he just doesn't, if you believe, and I don't know what side to believe, though I'm really only hearing one side, and that side is that he just doesn't get it. He doesn't really know how to play team-oriented basketball under the type of style that Patino likes mm-hmm. to play. He can't figure it out. Maybe that's true. Shouldn't part of that be on the coach being able to coach him how to do that? Some people are uncoachable. My fear is it will be much like we've seen with some Twins players where they leave and then go on to bigger and better things once they're gone, right? The one would be one of the most infamous of those would be Ortiz, right? We let him go, and didn't he end up being
he was pretty good,
almost a Hall of Fame type player for Boston. Mm-hmm. So that Washington goes elsewhere, someone gets into this kid's head, or maybe he goes to a different style of basketball that benefits his type of play better, and he ends up being some kind of a star. So it's disappointing because I really did think, well, we got a player that's going to end up being one of the better players in the nation, and he's donezo. So
it's not often we get a four-star recruit here.
No, we don't, and that's
and
why
we finally get one. And
that's why it's disappointing.
We're cursed.
Yeah.
Question number three.
Call Vikings, let's win this game.
It's now time to take an in-depth look at the state of the school.
The Vikings re-signed center Brett Jones to a one-year contract yesterday. Jones was acquired in a trade from the Giants for a 2019 seventh-round draft choice in August. Played in 14 games for the Vikings, including three starts at center while Pat Elflein was out with an injury. Common, does the signing of Jones get you excited about the Vikings' offensive line in 2019?
No, not really. Never know. Maybe he'll end up having a breakout season. But no, do you?
No, not at all.
Depth move, right? He's a guy that if you have to get down to what position is he? Center. If you get down to your third center, I guess that's good. But other than that, no,
He's a body just for the sake of having a body.
I will tell you what. I'm the anti-meat sauce in this. He loves the National Football League draft. And who is the guy that says day two and day three are the two best days of in the world?
Said Mike Smith? Michael Smith?
I think one of Michael Smith said the two best days in all of sports are days two and day three of the NFL draft, with day three being the best.
Yeah.
And then meat sauce. I'm always curious to see who they pick. I don't need to watch it, though. I just find out later. So with the Vikings, this year there's a bit more intrigue for me because I'm curious to see how they do address the offensive line. Because as far as I'm concerned, they've not done much. They got on the decline guy, right?
On the decline.
That's it. Is that the only?
Yeah.
And then this guy that we already had, but he's signed for death. They've done nothing to address the offensive line. Absolutely nothing other than Klein. And I think everybody, including the team themselves, believes something needs to be done. We've talked about this. I do believe they think coaching, they're going to coach guys up.
Yep.
They like the guy, the Dennison guy, and Kubiak. And that might be, they need a lot of coaching up, though. If you're going to look at what was their performance like the last year or two, they need a lot of coaching up to bring them toward the middle of the pack, right? And I'm kind of hoping for better than middle of the pack, but maybe we'll never get there. So my guess is they are going to do something in the draft, and how they go about it, if they grab a guy at 18, they trade up, trade down, or we've seen it before, when you got Zim whispering in Spielman's ear about getting me another defensive back, I don't think they'll take a defensive back with 18, but I wouldn't be shocked either. So this move doesn't do anything for me. I am more interested in this NFL draft than I've been in quite some time.
And that's it for today's edition of 5 Questions.
Brought to you by Green Mill Restaurant and Bar.
Well, actually, 3 questions, but 5 sounds like more than 4.
Boy, I forgot my tease, but it was something from yesterday. It'll be good, whatever we do, you know that. Other side of the break, it's the Common Man program, right? Cheer on the fan.
The Common Man.
Man. One of those guys that, to me, I've always tried to emulate in this business. It just, he's really just solid as could be, and I always liked his approach, and I liked his demeanor and his professionalism.
Weekdays at noon on The Fan.
It's time for that national cash contest. Once again, all you have to do is listen to The Fan every hour for your keyword and your shot to put a grand in your hand. This hour, your keyword is race. So text the keyword race to 200-200 to enter. Standard text messaging and data rates may apply. Keyword is race. Text it to 200-200 to enter.
Occurred to me, the only pay-per-view golf match that would be bigger than Riley versus Trump would be Trump versus that North Korean ruler guy. What's his name?
Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un, because didn't he have 18 holes in one in one round of golf?
I always love that one.
Who do you think is better at cheating? I think the guy from North Korea.
What's your handicap, by the way, after you have 18 hole-in-ones?
And then, you know what you do? There, the bet is if Trump cheats better or wins, complete and total disarmament for North Korea, right? And if we lose, or if Jong-un cheats, or I mean plays better than Trump, then they get to put like a nuclear missile and like put it in Portland. What do you think? What? I like our chances.
That'd be some drama.
It'd be some drama. It'd be high drama. I'm getting ripped, Tenneby. This email came into booth at KFAN.com.
What'd you just spill?
Oh, nothing. It was a spill. It was just my little satchel. Fell off the chair next to me. It has all my prep work in it. This email came into booth at KFAN.com, courtesy of our Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. Headline, subject line, sad lack of wild support. Says, being a daily common listener, the negativity towards the Wild pisses me off, especially from the bland Tenneby supposed hockey expert. The Wild are 5 points out. If they win 3 games in a row and the Avs lose out, and Arizona loses 2 games, then we're in, with an exclamation mark. The Avs are playing the Jets, the Sharks, and the Islanders, all playoff teams. Can you at least show some hope and help get fans fired up for one day until it's actually over? I like sports because of big comebacks. Tough love is great. Paul Fenton is a loser, but let's get pumped up once in a while. The cynicism is cute and all, but come on. Sad, really. Signed, Jim, a.k.a. Tenneby's attitude makes me sick. It's a good moniker. One of my new favorites. Nice effort, I mean, on his part, a better effort than the Wild have produced all season long to try to get me to change my ways.
Sure.
He makes some salient points. Is salient the right word? Can you look up the word salient? Salient over the bounding main. S-A-L-I-E-N-T, salient, which I think means he brought up some good.
Salient.
Some good points. What is the definition of salient?
Well, there's multiple. Prominent or conspicuous.
Okay.
Projecting or pointing outward. Leaping or jumping. Heraldry.
Well, then maybe it's not the right word definition. Anyway, he brings up some good points. He says, tough love is great, but let's get pumped up once in a while. I'm sorry I saved my energy. You know, I got a lot of enemies draining all my energies. And so I save my energies and my cheerleading for when I really have something to believe in. I'm not a cheerleader. If that's what the love covenant's for. PA is an unabashed, he's not really the definition homer. There's a difference between cheerleader and homer, right?
Yeah.
A homer is someone who always thinks the hometown team got screwed and this and that. He always roots for the hometown, big fan, but always thinks that, you know, we got chumped. And I don't think PA's that. I think, but PA is an unabashed cheerleader. He likes the hometown, and that's fine. There are a lot of talk show hosts that do that. As a matter of fact, every single play-by-play announcer that has hired local, I'm talking about national guys, I'm talking about the voice of the Vikings, the voice of the Lions, the voice of the Packers, the voice of the Twins, the voice of the Mariners, voice of the Yankees, basketball, hockey, all those guys are unabashed cheerleaders. They pull for the, because that's what the fan who is a, you know, if you're a fan of the Minnesota Wild, you want the Minnesota Wild hockey announcer to be a fan too. You want him to be excited and you want him to be disappointed and sad when they lose. And there's a place for that, and that's the places, that's the place for it, right? And then there are some talk show hosts that like that, they like to be portrayed that way, or they really are a cheerleader. That's not me. I'm tough love coming to my own kids when they play sports. Now, not to the extent I am with the local pros, because it is my, I mean, I created both Deuce and Baby Brother Peter from my loins. Matter of fact, did I tell you, Deuce finished 6th out of 25 runners in the 2 mile at the first meet of the year, indoor U of M on Saturday. 6th out of 25 is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. And Baby Brother Peter starts AAU, we have a basketball tournament Saturday, have a game at 2-something and then 7-something. That's why we, a close personal friend of mine had offered to try to find tickets for the Final Four Saturday. And I said, yeah, go ahead and, you know, see what you can do. But then when we checked the schedule and found out BBP was playing, we decided Pete would rather play than watch, and I'd rather watch Pete play than watch the Final Four. Would you agree with that? Would you be that way with your son? Sure. Or do you think you'd rather watch the
I'd rather play at Augusta than watch the Masters.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would much rather, the only time that I wouldn't watch Baby Brother Peter play an AAU game would be if Trump was taking on Bill O'Reilly. No.
Rick Riley.
So I know that's what you want, but what are, me being, so we play a Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now or a Dido montage. That's not gonna do any. I guess then to be, if you can slap something together for put your heart in it.
Well, even if you took out the Colorado and Arizona portion of this,
yep,
and just said the Wild have to win 3 games.
Right.
Even that I don't have a strong feeling toward.
Right.
Right. The Winnipeg team they're playing a lot of times at the end of the season with 3 games to go, the teams that are higher up in the postseason playoff standings. You know, they're not going to give it their all. They're not going to block shots. They're not going to battle because they don't want to get hurt before the playoffs.
Sure.
But this is a big game for Winnipeg tonight because all of a sudden the standings are cramped in the Central Division. They're only 2 points ahead of both St. Louis and Nashville. So for them, they have to keep winning because there's a big difference between winning the division and then having to be in that 2-versus-3 game.
Sure.
It's the difference between playing, you know, Colorado or Arizona or Dallas as opposed to Nashville or St. Louis. So, for them, they still have something to play for. So, the odds of beating Winnipeg aren't great.
To bring it closer to home, it'd be the difference between Wes Walls playing you in 18 holes of golf or playing me in 18 holes of golf, right?
Very, very similar.
Very similar.
So, it just... What has this Wild team shown that they can go on a 3-game winning streak? I haven't seen it for quite some time. And then you combine that with, all right, we need Colorado to absolutely fail, which Colorado's been playing great lately. And then you need Arizona on top of that to fail. It ain't going to happen. There's a reason.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason there's 0.9% chance.
You're being realistic, and it's not your job or my job to sell hope. There's enough people that do that. This town is filled with hope sellers up and down the dial, fish wraps east and west, on Fox Sports North, and they're all good at what they do. This is not to demean what they do or to criticize what they do. Everybody finds out where their niche is. Mine is being a Richard. I found my niche.
You're Hall of Fame.
And I'm Hall of Fame at it. I'm the Ty Cobb. I'm the Williams Astudillo of being a gadfly, being a Richard, and that's my spot. And
And this isn't, and people that listen know, if the locals give me something to praise, I do praise it. Now, I'm a little begrudging, and I'm always a little afraid to jump off, you know, feet first, you know, into the deep end of the pool, because our hearts have been broken so often. Even, we saw with 13-3, Minneapolis Miracle turned into Philadelphia Flop. It started from hashtag bring it home to hashtag watch it home. Though, we weren't that far from winning that game against Philadelphia. Tennessee. All the Vikings needed was a touchdown, two-point conversion, onside kick. 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 Stop me when we get to 38 points. Just sorry, it's just not my job. I understand where you're coming from, but that's just not me. I tend to be when we return, an entertainment, I think he's a star. I didn't recognize the name. He's bitter on Twitter with Minneapolis, much like Chuck Barkley. I'll explain. Other side of the break, Common Man program here on The Fan.
The Common Man.
You'll be the first one to admit that your time has come and gone.
Weekdays at noon on The Fan.
The Fan.
It's the Don't Miss concert event of the summer, so don't miss out on the best ticket prices. Twin Cities Summer Jam, presented by Mystic Lake, is July 18th, 19th, 20th at Canterbury Park. Aerosmith, Tim McGraw, Pitbull, Rascal Flatts, REO, Speedwagon, and more to be announced soon. More info at tcsummerjam.com.
As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up to me and says, "Hey dude, why don't you hand over your watch?" Oh, wrong word. Tennessee, I've had a change of heart. I've had an epiphany.
Really?
Can you look up the word epiphany?
Sure.
I know it's the name of a church on Foley Boulevard in Coon Rapids. But look up the word epiphany. I've had an epiphany during that last break. I took a long, hard look at myself on the reflection in the glass that separates your studio from mine.
Epiphany.
And an
epiphany.
And it says...
Obviously there's multiple definitions. A Christian festival observed on January 6th, blah, blah, blah. An appearance or a manifestation... especially of a deity.
Sorry.
A sudden,
that would be me.
A sudden intuitive perception of or insight into the reality or essential meaning of something.
That's it. Say that one again.
A sudden intuitive perception of or insight into the reality or essential meaning of something.
And it did happen suddenly last summer. And it is reality. I'm getting behind the Wild. Because my sources tell me there's a better chance of us getting the number one pick in the lottery than there is to qualify for the playoffs. So
I always love that one.
The Wild need to lose so we can draft Hughes.
The Wild need to lose so we can draft Hughes.
What's Hughes' first name?
Jack.
The Wild needs to lose so we can draft Jack Hughes.
The Wild needs to lose so we can draft Jack Hughes,
right? Because he would be the...
Lose for Hughes.
We need to lose for Hughes.
Yeah, we need
so
a game breaker.
I would hope Tennessee's attitude makes me sick, guy. Wonderful moniker. I hope now he understands that we have seen the light, that we haven't had an epiphany, as it were. And this is almost, you said the first definition was religious. This is a religious experience for me. I'm actually, mark it down on your calendar, Common Man is actually rooting for and supporting the hometown team in a weird roundabout way. But I am.
I always love that one.
Right?
You want him to lose. It's a better shot at Hughes.
Wouldn't you have to have a better shot at Hughes? Now, here's my only issue, Tim. I'm going to ask you. You're the hockey guy.
Yeah.
Is he right-handed or left-handed shooter?
He's a left-handed shot. Yeah.
Is that a problem for us then?
Well, we call that a good problem to have.
Yeah.
We'll move another lefty.
Will we move a lefty?
Let's bring him into the lineup.
Okay. What is his story?
Because Kaprizov's a lefty, too.
What's his...
Well,
he's the clear-cut number one overall pick.
Does he drink, gamble, wife, kids?
Well, he's probably like 18 years old.
Oh, I bet he doesn't. What he might drink that we don't know.
He probably drinks.
Don't think he smokes. Might womanize that. I don't know that either. I don't know if he gambles either. I don't think he has a wife or kids, would be my guess. But that I don't know either. So what about him now?
I was just going to see if he had a Wikipedia page. I was wondering if he's too young, but he does. Yes, so he played for the United States National Development Team, and then he also played in the World Juniors team for Team USA.
Where is he from? Where has he been?
He's from Orlando, Florida, or at least that's where he's born.
Wow. Well, wonders never cease.
5'10", 166. Not the biggest kid.
No.
But he's got some hands. He's got some vision. He can shoot.
How is he with the saucer pass? Because that's, for me, first thing I look at when I look at a hockey prospect, can he not only tend to be? Can he? Does he know how to perform the saucer pass? But can he also receive one and put the biscuit in the basket?
Sure.
Can he slip it by the goalie? What else do you know about him?
His older brother Quinn was drafted 7th overall.
We call him the Mighty Quinn. They did a song about him, as a matter of fact,
in the 2018 draft by the Canucks.
Okay.
Father Jim.
Jim Quinn.
Former hockey player and team captain for Providence College, is an assistant coach for the Boston Bruins, has been an assistant coach for the Boston Bruins and director of player development for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mother Ellen played ice hockey, lacrosse, and soccer at the University of New Hampshire, was inducted to the University of New Hampshire Athletics Hall of Fame.
By the way, I'm being told by a number of people on the right, Epiphany is on Hanson Boulevard, not Foley, and they're right. It is on Hanson Boulevard. They are absolutely correct. It is on Hanson Boulevard, just past those railroad tracks. Just a half a mile from the railroad tracks, you can get anything you want at Epiphany Catholic Church. You can even get saved, I think. So, yeah, lose for Hughes, right?
Yeah.
So is that good enough for you?
Right now the Wild have a 0.9% chance of making the playoffs. But where they are right now, they have a 3% chance at getting the number one overall pick. And right now, we're 1 point ahead of Chicago in the standings. So within the next three games, if Chicago were to leapfrog us...
The who?
Are you
talking about the Chicago Blackhawks? The hated Chicago Blackhawks?
The Blackhawks.
So... if we lose out and stay at 81 points, then there's a good shot. Chicago just needs to win one game to jump ahead of us. That's now 3.5% chance of the first pick. If Vancouver, who's at 78 points, somehow wins two of their last three, now we have a 5% chance of the number one pick.
We're coming! Who's right now got the best chance?
We're coming!
As we speak.
Well, this is...
just throw out a team.
Well, I know who it is.
Oh, who is it?
I was just going to say, this is not a good thing for Minnesota Wild fans. Even though Colorado is likely to make the postseason, they made a trade with Ottawa to get Ottawa's first-round pick. Right now, Ottawa...
No.
And it's going to end up this way because they have a five-point cushion. Ottawa has the number one overall pick, so the Colorado Avalanche are going to have the number one overall pick. Well, best chance at the pick, I should say.
Let's just say this. We got a message for Colorado. It goes like this.
Objects in your mirror may be closer than they appear.
So there you go.
We got to figure out how to get first-round picks from really bad teams. Why have we not been doing this strategy before?
Is this protected? I know in the NFL, don't they have protected picks? Or
they
is
do.
It the NBA they have protected picks?
NBA.
You have protected picks. Do they have protected picks in the NHL? Like, for instance, is this protected or will Ottawa have to give up the number one pick?
It'll be Colorado's pick.
And they're a pretty good club, right?
All right.
This story I found on my handheld computer, which doubles as a communication device, and it's from a website that formerly employed Mark Rosen of Channel 4 Sports fame. It's Channel 4 Sports, CBS.com. Channel 4, whatever it is, whatever the exact website is. Now, it's dated April 1st, so this is possible as an April Fool's joke, but I don't think it is. Are you familiar with an actor, director, and playwright named Tyler Perry? Do you know who that
I've
is?
I've heard the name, but don't really know what he does.
Story, Dateline, Minneapolis. While staying at a Minneapolis hotel, the actor, director, and playwright Tyler Perry got, quote, mad as hell when he saw the bottled water priced at $9 in his hotel room, and he took his frustrations to Instagram.
Sure.
We don't have a bitter on, we don't have something similar for Instagram for bitter on Twitter, do we? What would it be?
In a jam about the gram, something like that?
Yeah, that might work. Irritated with Insta.
Sure.
Irritated on Insta. He wrote in a caption to a photo of a Fiji water bottle with a $9 price tag. They can't be serious, right? What the hell, this water do? Cure cancer? Make hair grow? Did Jesus bottle it when he met the woman at the well? Y'all got to be kidding me. It's a pretty good line.
Yeah.
He's a playboy.
He should have stopped and done flop sweat and tears with you while he's here.
His post received more than 145,000 likes and 14,000 comments. He wrote it last week while staying in Minneapolis at his Madea's Farewell Play Tour, had a two-night run at the Orpheum Theater. While Perry has been listed as one of the highest paid men in entertainment, he says he'd die before paying nearly $10 for Fiji water. He would rather die. Now that's someone who has the courage of his convictions. In his own words, I will swallow spit and die of hydration before I pay $9 for a bottle of water. Now, why doesn't it say which hotel? I don't see that anywhere in the story. Well, I guess it's not Super 8. It's not Motel 6.
Probably right? Not.
It's not the Gopher Motel. My guess is, where was this? At the Guthrie? What's nearest the Guthrie? Is that what it says? Is this where it was at? Did I read it? Is that what I read? That he was at his.
You did say Guthrie.
No, at the Orpheum.
Oh.
He had a two-night run at the Orpheum. That's downtown Minneapolis, right? So he probably stayed either at the. Is it? Well, there's the new one right across from Target, right?
Do you want me to reveal? I just Googled five-star hotels in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Hotel Ivy.
Possible, I guess. That's by the Fauchet Tower.
Le Meridian. Chambers?
I think that's the one right across from the Bullseye, I think.
Lowe's Minneapolis Hotel?
That's the one I think that's right across from.
The Marquette Hotel?
That's the one that's right across.
Lake, I always used to say it, the W.
The W.
Grand Hotel Minneapolis. Millennium Hotel Minneapolis. Okay.
Now, I always do find it amusing when wealthy people complain about the price of something.
Sure.
Right? But at the same time, I do tend to, I mean, $9 for a bottle of water. As long as you are willing to pay for, enough people are willing to pay a price for something, that will always be the rock bottom price. And at these high-end hotels, if you are a well-to-do, well-heeled, you heel the rubber rather than toe the rubber, you have lots of money. The convenience of having that bottle sitting there, because I've stayed in some fancy pants hotels, and they'll have a couple of bottles of Fiji water or some fancy pants water, Astadio water. And it will say, this is going to cost you, this isn't free. This is a $9, $8, $7 bottle of water. For some people, they look at the bottle of water and they go, I can reach for this, take off the cap, drink it, and it cost me $9. I can get a Dasani across the street at the convenience store, but I have to walk out of my room, walk down the hall, wait for the elevator, go down 9 floors, get out, cross the street, go in, find the water, stand in line, pay for it, back across the street, back into the lobby, back to the hotel, wait for the elevator, up 9 stairs, down the hall, and then back into my room to take the cap off and drink it. And some people think it's $2.50 for the Dasani. It's $9 here. That's $6.50. For some people, the convenience is worth the $6.50.
It's like Dark Star and Valet. Some people look.
For people that don't know, could you play that? This is how it works in the real world. The late, great Dark Star would say this about valet parking. And now?
And now?
There's valet parking.
You pull up in front. Here's how it works. in the real world, just so everybody knows. Pull up, you give the guy $20, you tell him, take good care of it, it's the only one I've got. When you come out, there'll be two guys holding the doors open for you and whoever you may be with. Slip the kid $5 and off you go. A lot of people say, that's $25 and you didn't get anything for it. I said, that's $25 and I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. $9 and I didn't have to do anything. I reached onto the table and I drank it. So, I don't know what to tell Tyler Perry or Perry Tyler or Perry Tyler Moore, but that's the way it works in the real world. You know, you didn't have to
do
anything.
You know me, I'm going down the elevator. I'm walking out of the hotel. I'm going across the street to the convenience store. But if I've got Tyler Perry or Dark Star money, I'll just slip in there.
If your value bet paid off in winning the office pool for the NCAA, you might treat yourself. You might treat yourself and say, you know what? $450, how many boards did you enter?
Just one.
And for is that $5?
Yeah, $5.
So $445, you're willing to part with $9 for a bottle of water and treat yourself. See, that's how it works in the real world.
It was Lowe's, by the way.
It was Lowe's.
It's, you can see it on the picture. It's on top of the water.
Okay. What's he doing staying at a hardware store? And I would think that would be a little expensive. But remember, didn't I recant this tale from my trip at winter break? Spring break? We're staying at the Wyndham Grand in Clearwater Beach, Florida. Baby brother Peter comes back from the convenience store. He had bought a bottle of suntan lotion, and he had bought a bag of Bugles. There's price tags on both. Little bottle, like, you know, how big is that? 12-ounce bottle maybe it was? 12-ounce, 8-ounce? $15.
You've got to be kidding me.
I would rather endure second-degree sunburn than pay $15. And the bag of Bugles, not a big bag, you know, not the fun size, the family size.
The personal size.
It was the kind you get out of a vending machine. They charge $4.59.
You've got to be kidding me.
Very much like Tyler Perry. Of course, my boy had already made the purchase. Had I been in that store, I would have said the same thing Tyler Perry said about the bottle of water. Is which what I said to Baby Brother Perry. I said, $4.59 for a bag of Bugles, but there have been enough people that have stayed at the Wyndham Grand, that have grabbed a bag of Bugles, that don't blink at $4.59.
No.
They don't blink. And so, as long as that's what they can get, that's what they can get. Right? So, let that be a lesson to you. That would be same thing when we found out. You know what I did for bottles of water down when we there was the bottles of water were $5 at their little convenience store. Think about that. It cost as much as a bag of Bugles. But about a block and a half away, there was a convenience store that would sell everything that you know what a convenience store would sell. And we found 24 packs of bottled water for I think it was like, you know, $8.99 or something.
Isn't that crazy?
So guess what I did? I bought one of those, and baby brother Peter lugged it back to the room, and so we had 24 bottles of water.
Brilliant!
24 bottles of water on the wall, and we had 24, and we drank it. You know what? The water tasted better when I knew I was only paying, how much is that a bottle? You figure, you do the math. I mean, you know how we learned to count Detroit? 0-1, 0-2, 0-3. So there you go. So while I feel for Tyler Perry at the same time, dude, that's how it is, man. At the high end.
If you're staying in a 5-star hotel, I'm not going to feel for you too much. If that $9 water was too expensive for you, then maybe you should downgrade on the stars on the hotel.
We'll see what Mark Rosen thinks about all of this when he joins us next.
Mark Rosen joins the Common Man.
Oh, boy.
Next on The Fan.
Loaded now.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me.
Let me guess, you know this one too.
Well, I was just. Yes, of course. I think it was in junior high.
What's the name of the band?
The Turtles.
Okay. Yeah. Checking.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's correct. No, I just wanted to make sure.
But I remember, sometimes a song will elicit that.
Trigger a memory.
Trigger a memory right away, and you're in a car with your buddies, and you're playing it, and you're talking about this. It's crazy how you remember not just the song and the time, but the conversation you may have been having. That happens with certain songs, and that's the beauty of music. We all know that. And look at you. I mean, you're walking, talking encyclopedia of...
This song triggered the memory of you driving with your buddies.
Right.
This one triggered the memories of me in my backseat of my 60 Chevy, where the woods
got heavy. Really?
In other words, we learned about love in the back of a Dodge, but the lesson hadn't gone too far.
You better check out the age, your age, when the song came out.
I didn't say when it came out.
Oh, when you listened to it some other time.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Driving movie.
I just quoted from two other songs.
I get it.
Do you know which songs I quoted from those two?
No. I'm saying you're a walking, talking encyclopedia of lyrics. I envy you.
Do you know which two songs I quoted
from? No.
Bob Seger's Night Moves.
Night
and
Moves.
And Harry Chapin's Taxi.
Both terrific songs.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And they're both on my... Is Night Moves on my top 100? I don't think it is. Would you put it on there? Night Moves by Bob Seger. Little trivia about that.
Night Moves is on there.
Oh. I read, I don't know, it was liner notes or Wikipedia or whatever, or heard an interview. Seger said as soon as they finished recording that song, they all looked at each other and said, that's a hit. They knew.
Seriously,
I mean, some songs, you just know immediately that that's going to be a smash hit. And I don't know where that went. I'm guessing, Tennessee will look this up for me. I'm guessing that went number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
Immediately.
I'm going to go, I don't know about immediately, but I bet it went. Tennessee, would you see where Night Moves went? I'm going to say Billboard Hot 100, number one, 1977. Maybe one's too high, but I'm going to go with it.
Top five.
Number one, 1977 on Billboard Hot 100. Night Moves by Bob Seger from Detroit, Michigan. You know why he returned to touring? Because I think it was his son, maybe it was his daughter, maybe it was his son and daughter. They had never seen him work before.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, let me show you what Pappy used to do. And so then he went back out on tour because he'd retired. And he wanted his kids to see what he did for a living. And so that's when he came out of retirement.
It was released December of 1976.
Okay.
Not sure when it reached on the Billboard Hot 100, but at some point it reached number four.
Only got to four?
Wow.
What songs was it unable to overtake? I wonder when it got to number four on that Billboard. Four is still pretty gaudy.
It is. Speaking of rock and rollers, I was just reading that Mick Jagger's having a heart replacement valve surgery, so he's had to be silent. He's 75 now. Again, going back in time, but he had to, unfortunately, and he tweeted about it, cancel his North American tour. But he'll get back on stage as soon as possible, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. They think he'll be able to do that.
If you were in the situation of Mick Jagger and they said the only way you can survive is we got to put a pig pump in you, in other words, the heart of a pig, would you do it?
Of course.
Okay, I just want to make sure. How about if you were in a motorcycle accident, got your lips torn off? Would you let Mick Jagger's
lips or my lips?
Would you let Mick Jagger's lips on your face?
I absolutely would.
How about monkey lips?
The only thing I probably wouldn't want is.
I'm just asking questions.
I understand that.
These are things that keep me up.
I think it's hard. I'm not quite sure. I'm still astonished that his liver's held up all these years.
No, that would be Keith Richards.
Yeah, Keith Richards. I mean, Jagger's probably. I mean, Mike. It's not like. And here's the thing. We've all seen. And love and admire aging rock and rollers, whatever. I mean, seeing McCartney at Target Field a couple of years ago, and I was in awe of the fact that he didn't take a drink of water for two straight hours, never took a break, never changed his costume, just got up there and did his thing. But when you watch, some of the rock and rollers who come here and just basically sit down and do their songs, they sound good, whatever. They're not moving like they used to move. And Jagger is not going to come and go in concert and sit on a stool and sing Satisfaction, and he's going to move, or else it ain't going to happen.
Which is the only way I would go see the Rolling Stones now is if they were at the Dakota Jazz Club. I can't go to big arenas and watch groups anymore
because
it's too big, it's too noisy, it's too crowded.
It's going to wait forever, though. I mean, for the big, for the big groups, it's always going to be an arena.
But that's what I'm saying. I won't go see them.
All right,
they're not for me. If you're too big, I like the small, intimate.
Well, I agree, but I think the days of any group like the Stones playing at the Dakota.
Well, right, and that's why I'll never see them. I saw the Stones back when they did their.
They played at Excelsior when they one of their early concerts.
Their Steel Wheels tour, I think it was called. Yeah. And it was at the it was at Metrodome, and I went to that one. Mm-hmm. I did see them at Metrodome.
Right. I've been
to lots of arena concerts.
Sure, I get it.
I write about it in my book. Did you know I wrote a book?
I did not.
I write about the Met Center in my book, my fond memories of the Met Center.
A lot of great concerts at Met Center.
I talk about just concert going in general. It's a really nice chapter. My book is available right now.
Still?
It's still available.
How do you find it?
Commonmanbook.com. Mm-hmm.
Where's the name of the place again?
Commonmanbook.com. Only $25. That includes tax, title, license, shipping, handling, and gratuity.
What's the gratuity for?
Well, give me the tip. Either that or just tell me my tip is never write another book again. No. But when I do write the next one, it's going to be the tell-all book. When I retired and I let people in on all the inside stories about you and everybody else that worked here.
Well, you know what?
There are a lot of.
I could still write another couple chapters to my book as well. And I guarantee
you. Mean Jim Bruton could write chapters for you.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
One of the
I wrote mine on my own, in case you didn't know.
And you published it on your own, and you made more money on your own.
I did.
One of the great venues, and I'll say this, and I had the honor and pleasure of going to, was the original Guthrie Theater to see not just obviously great plays, but some of the intimate. You talk about intimate concerts. I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to the original Guthrie Theater. I mean, I saw Duke Ellington perform there, one of his last concerts before he passed away, and you're literally 20 feet away from him.
Right.
And I saw Robin Williams perform there years ago. I've seen some amazing at the Guthrie. And it's like, wow, I can't believe what I'm watching here. And again, unfortunately, those days are probably gone. There was a great place called the Prom Center in St. Paul where I was a big jazz guy. So, I mean, a good friend of mine.
There's a new Prom Center in Oakdale. They took the name.
But the original one, mm-hmm. I was a huge Rich fan.
I watched boxing at the old Prom Center.
This was not about your story. This was my story.
No, but I was just throwing in I've experienced it as well. I've experienced it at the Prom Center. I just wanted to make you know that I'm aware of it.
I understand that. Yeah. No, I did see Buddy Rich was one of my favorites. He was, again, we've argued about the greatest drummers of all time. I know I'm partial because I saw him in person.
Who'd you like better, Buddy Rich or Charlie Rich?
Buddy Rich.
Really?
Yeah. I just thought Buddy Rich was insanely good.
Behind closed doors?
I know.
That song.
I'm not comparing.
Just that
you can't
song
compare the
alone.
Artist. I mean, Buddy Rich was one of the best drummers of all time with his orchestra.
But when you have a song that says, and when we get behind closed doors.
Yeah, baby.
And she lets her hair hang down.
Hard to top that.
And she lets me know that I'm a man.
Okay.
Oh, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors.
I get it. Brilliant. I get it.
And Buddy was good.
Buddy wasn't good. Buddy was epic.
Yeah.
He sweat like no one else. He had towels around his neck.
Well, it's because he was a little overweight. That'll happen.
He wasn't overweight. Buddy Rich was real thin. Yes. Anyway, we're talking about great venues. Unfortunately, I agree that's it's like, the Final Four, obviously the Final Fours. This just in, the Final Four is here this week.
Yeah.
You know, they used to play just in arenas, basketball arenas. I mean, Bird and Magic didn't play it wasn't an event.
And that's where, for me, that's why if I were going to attend the Final Four, you know, you want to have one of the really good seats to be up in the nosebleeds.
I know.
Now, there are people who still enjoy it from being, that's fine. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't go. But for me, that just doesn't. That doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like my Deuce asked me. Said, "So he'd ask me this every time there's one of the national events here, Super Bowl or big game as I call it."
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me you could have got a press pass and went to the NCAA basketball? I said, "Yeah, but I would have been up in the nosebleeds because I'm not one of the Rick Rileys or the Mark Rosens of the world that I wouldn't get courtside or first. I would get that auxiliary press way up in the corner.
Not for basketball, you would.
And that just doesn't do anything for me up there.
Football, I was at the Super Bowl, but I was fine because I was up in the second, third deck, and I was behind one of the end zones.
How dare they do that to you?
I know it's my stadium. Like they had me way up there. Honestly, I didn't care. I was so.
You were just thrilled to be there.
I wasn't thrilled at all to be there. To be honest with you, I was exhausted. From the Vikings debacle 2 weeks before that and covering all the activities leading up to the Super Bowl. I didn't really have a stake in it, other than the fact that I couldn't wait for the game to get over.
Did you after all your coverage of the Vikings? Did you collapse in bed and stay there for 3 days?
Like, I got snowed in Philadelphia,
like John Feinstein does when he finishes writing a book.
No,
that's what he says. Leading up to the deadline, that after the book finishes deadline, he stays in bed for 3 days. He's so exhausted.
I can believe it. Not for 3 days.
Huh? 3 days? Yeah. That exhausts.
Well, it's a trying experience.
When I hit deadline day, I went and played 18 holes of golf. It didn't faze me in the least.
So you're comparing yourself to John Feinstein.
I'm just saying I have more stamina than
there is no comparison, it sounds like.
Yeah, it doesn't sound apparently like there is. I've got more stamina.
Did you want the other songs when Night Moves was number four?
Yeah.
You want the top 10 or just the three ahead of it?
How about...
Because actually the ones behind it, I think, are better than the ones ahead of it.
Well, let's go top 10.
Okay. Number 10. This is March 12th, 1977.
Fleetwood Mac, Go Your Own Way.
Yeah.
And that was a song that was basically... It was allegedly a song written Stevie Nicks and what's his face?
Mick?
No. Stevie Nicks and the guy that just kicked out of the band. Why can't I think of his name? Guitar player guy. Come on, help me. Lindsey Buckingham. It was a song because that's when they were breaking up. Go Your Own Way. So that song was actually wrote as a message to the two of them. That's Fleetwood.
Nice.
Always a soap opera.
Yeah, always a soap opera.
Number 9, I'm a fan of this song.
You're a rich girl, and you're
Hall & Oates.
Yep.
You know it.
Number 8.
Good Lord.
Can you throw in a Lions highlight there?
Oh, my God. Do we have to hear this?
Can you just find one anywhere? Megatron, you are...
Stand up, Ford Field! Stand up!
That was seriously 1977?
Well, sure, yes.
Probably the last time they won a playoff game, too.
That's good.
How about the Cardiac Cats?
Al Stewart will be at the Dakota.
No kidding.
September or October.
Oh, we'll have to go together.
Okay, that was number... That's number what?
That was number 8.
Okay. And now we'll move on to...
7 we don't have in the system.
Okay. What was it?
Torn Between Two Lovers.
Oh, Mary McGregor. Awful song.
Number
Torn that was a Between bad song. Two Lovers. It was a gal who was two-time. She didn't know which guy she wanted.
Number 6?
Something I've got to deal with. The song that every guy back in 1977 could not admit he liked.
Right. Well, Mama
but
Mia
secretly
still
did.
Yeah.
They would never say, oh, this is ABBA, Dancing Queen, this is terrible, but they loved it. I was a big fan of Dancing Queen by ABBA. Right here in your home where they is.
Well, and
call ourselves the fan.
A whole new...
I'm back!
You're back.
This is about me, Mark, right?
And
this is about
me hitting the post, not about you. A whole new generation got to listen to
We don't care about Mama Mia. It's a terrible play. Now move on to the...
Terrible what?
It's awful.
You never even saw the movie.
I don't need to.
Number 5.
Okay. Ooh, Manfred Mann's Earth Band. This is Blinded by the Light.
Correct. It's a good year for music.
Number 4 was Night Moves.
Okay.
Was it a disco song in here somewhere, like Bee Gees?
Well, number 1 and number 3, I haven't heard either, and actually neither of them were in the system. Number 3.
Oh, this is Randy Van Warmer. No, I think it is.
No.
Oh, I Like Dreaming. It's by Nolan is his name,
Kenny
right?
Kenny Nolan.
Yeah. One hit wonder, Kenny Nolan.
I'm just shocked the Bee Gees aren't in here.
Number 2.
Oh.
Steve Miller Band. Fly Like an Eagle. I saw this live in concert, the same concert where Frampton melted down. Remember, Frampton was trying to tear the camera out of the guy on stage. Did you hear about Peter Frampton, right? He's got some kind of a malady, which is like disintegrating his vocal cords or something. So he's doing a finale tour. It'll be the last time. Or maybe with his fingers and his throat. Anyways, he's not going to be able to perform for much longer. He's going to be up at, I think it's Grand Casino Hinckley for an outdoor show in August. And then what was number 1?
And number 1, I'm curious to see if Rosen knows what the song is. Please wait until he has to figure it out.
All right.
Evergreen.
You knew it right away.
That's incorrect.
Barbara Streisand.
It is Barbara Streisand, yeah.
I thought it was Evergreen.
Oh, you are partially correct now that I see.
Yeah.
The Evergreen is in parentheses.
Yeah, it's Evergreen.
Yeah.
It's just labeled Love Theme from A Star Is Born.
He loves this song.
It's evergreen.
You love this, don't you?
The guy got married to it. This was over the top. Everybody played Evergreen during that time. So, yeah, I was right. It was from A Star Is Born.
Ten to me. Start it over, and I'll tell you how fast it would take me to change the dial if the song
now,
came out.
I know. Well, right now.
Now. Actually, what? It sounds very similar to the beginning of If You Could Read My Mind by Gordon Lightfoot. Play the beginning of this again, and then play the beginning of Gordon Lightfoot's If You Could Read My Mind. Okay, now listen. That first little guitar part, not the angelic stuff. And then here's If You Could Read My Mind.
Yeah.
So somebody stole it from somebody.
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest songs.
Oh, this is a great song.
Is this
song.
On my...
I've never heard this.
It'll bring a grown man to tears.
The reason...
He wrote this about his divorce.
Did he really?
Yeah. Gordon Lightfoot wrote this about his divorce.
So you want this in your top 100?
Yeah, this is top 100. This is one of the
lyrics are great.
Everybody remembers Wreck of the Tenor Fitzgerald, which is a classic of his. But this is the best song he ever did. Chains upon my feet. You know that ghost is me.
I have the reason
if
why.
If you listen closely to this song... And you've ever been in a bad relationship? He wrote it about his divorce. That's cutting open a vein.
Yeah.
He's from Canada.
It wasn't mean spirited, though.
No. Oh, no, absolutely. No. It's about the paperback novel.
Just like the paperback novel.
Listen to this line. The kind of
drugstore sells. Beautiful. Can't write songs like that today. Nobody's capable of it.
Where the heartaches come, the hero would be.
But heroes often fail.
Especially my God, he's walking away.
In Minnesota.
Heroes, he can't read it.
No.
The ending of the book is hard to take. He can't read it again. He can't go over his life with his gal again.
Oh my God, I'm going to start crying. I'm going to pull a hockey here. I'm going to start crying.
And then when he compares it to being as an actor in a three-way script, and he's dumped. Here it is right here, listen.
Like a movie star who gets burned in a three-way script.
You're done.
Oh, my God.
See ya.
Number two.
Oh, okay.
A movie queen.
You can't write him like this. There's nothing currently on the radio new.
Nothing close.
In the country that would compare to what Gordon Lightfoot did right there.
But you're right. This is the one that... Evan Fitzgerald, this is the one. That was beautifully written. Sad, but...
Yeah, very very much.
Now, that's the reason why the Bee Gees... I knew it came out in 77, but the movie was not released. Saturday Night Fever was not released till December of 77, so it must have been 7 or 8 when the Bee Gees hits.
Boogie Child by the Bee Gees was number 12 that week.
Have I ever done my Andy Gibb impression for you?
No, I've never heard it. I've heard your Dylan about 3,000 times. You could have saved us from...
Well, that's it, right?
That's
from the Bee Gees era, from Saturday. That's what they did.
You need to get up about 3 octaves higher.
Well, yeah. Well,
you're not...
Don't have it quite what I used to
say. It's a cigarette throat.
That's really what it was. Yeah. We'll pause. We'll come back. More with Mark Rosen, Common Man Program on The Fan. Hey, why don't we try to put a grand in somebody's hand, Tennessee?
Yeah, all you got to do is listen to The Fan every hour because the National Cash Contest is back. All you have to do is get the keyword. And you'll get a shot at putting a grand in your hand this hour. Your keyword is Java. So text the keyword Java, J-A-V-A, to 200-200 to enter. Standard text messaging and data rates may apply.
He covers the Minnesota sports beat with the passion of an 8-year-old. It's Mark Rosen with the Common Man on the...
Join KFAN's Eric Nordquist and Coors Light for a live broadcast at the Poorhouse in Minneapolis from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday. We will preview the final round of the College Hoops Tournament, giving away prizes and a chance to meet the great Bill Walton. More info at KFAN.com. Keyword events.
She never makes a scene by hanging all
over me in a crowd. I didn't know Bob Dylan did a duet with Charlie Rich. The Silver Fox was his nickname. Oh, they love to talk. Oh, they love to talk. right?
Is it just our age, or is this, I mean, these lyrics are
when
so...
they turn out the lights, I know she'll be
leaving with me. Yeah, baby.
That's it.
Here we go, right here. Now listen.
Here it comes.
And when we get behind closed doors, and she lets her hair hang down, and she makes me glad that I'm a man.
Maybe. This emailer writes, Lightfoot's best song is Sundown, end of story. Mm. No. I mean, yeah,
well, it's subjective.
Preference.
Come on. Yeah,
I mean, Sundown's a terrific song, and I bet Sundown went Billboard Hot 100, 1974, 73. Sundown, I bet, went to, it might have went, it might have gone number one. It certainly went top 10. See it there anywhere, Tennessee? Sundown, Gordon?
Number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100.
1973 or 4?
It was released in March of 1974.
Okay.
You're good.
Went number one. That's a song about Lady of the Night, which is, it's a great song.
Yeah. Don't come mumble creeping. That. You can...
Don't count crumb. It's part of my bit.
I get it.
That Meatsaw stole from me.
Of course he did.
I'm just like, he did steal that bit from me. He's admitted to it. I've told him he can have it. He can use it. It's a song about a stripper. Don't come creeping around my back stair, which is a great tune, but it's just not a guy cutting open a vein on his divorce.
Right.
But anyway, it is to each his own. Your club plays tonight against Kansas City. It's a battle of two aces.
Yeah,
the
Rios
coming off, 7 1/3 or 7 2/3 of shutout ball. The kid for Kansas City also threw, 7 innings of shutout ball.
Keller.
We have two ERAs of 0.0.
Something's got to give.
Somebody's always got to go tonight. I think.
Well, it's first road game tonight. A quick two-game series. And then for whatever reason, the first week of April, we are already in interleague play. Remember, it was sort of reserved for summertime. I don't know why they're doing this. The Twins play in Philadelphia this weekend with, of course, Bryce Harper now with the Phils. And it's just odd that they're launching into interleague play. And I'm sure, obviously, the Twins aren't the only team getting involved in it. I just don't understand why they are. I mean, normally a series like that, even in Philadelphia, I mean, Philadelphia, if the weather's good, will draw, especially with Harper there. But interleague play, it seems to me, is much better suited if you're still buying into that as a gimmick and that you really care, you know, depending on what team comes to your town. Seems like it's better served for the summer months. It's still great when, you know, Milwaukee comes to town. Obviously, they were an American League team for a long time, or it happens that you get the Dodgers or the Cubs or one of those teams. It'll be fun to see how Barrios how he handles this again tonight. Gibson was pushed back till tomorrow. He's still, I guess he's recovering. So they play the afternoon.
The coli he had, right?
Yeah, it just sounds horrible.
Well, there was a piece that we referred to today that Lavelle Neal III wrote about. You know, it's funny. You know, it's either we're playing too many games or not enough games. And the problem right now is that, because pitchers now don't get to be on their normal routine and players don't. It's like, just play ball.
Exactly.
And at least Baldelli said, we'll figure out a way
they'll figure it out.
Get it done. But, yeah, it's very early in the season. The pull that pocket protectors are awfully excited about this club. I mean, I saw pieces after the weekend where people are writing off Cleveland now. Basically saying, this lineup might even be worse than we thought it was going to be.
I read that, too.
And the Twins lineup, boy, with the new, you know, again, in the nine-run game, all the new guys had big games. And they like the pitching staff. There are people that are already basically saying, it's like, you know, who do we square off against in the first round of the playoffs?
Well, I think Cleveland did not reinvest in their lineup. They lost Brantley, among a couple other guys. Lindor, who's one of the best players in the game, is out right now with an injury. Their pitching will have to hold down the fort for now, and it very likely will. They're still a very talented team. I think my level of excitement, if you want to use that word, you can certainly tone it down. Mm-hmm. When I do look at this lineup, and I realize that, you know, you're still going to see, you hopefully will see, you know, Kepler and Rosario and a few of the leftover young guys that are going to be coming along will play and start hitting the balls. We warm up a little bit. I'm just the fact that they have Nelson Cruz in the middle of this lineup, and for the first time how long? They have a legitimate power hitter. This is before Sano comes back in the middle of that lineup.
Since Jim Tomey.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. But where you go, this guy could hit the ball out of the ballpark. When was the last time we said that about a Twins player?
Jim Tomey.
That was it. And I I'm anxious to, at some point when they get back in town, I obviously was gone last week, if Buxton continues to hit the ball with any authority and does what he's capable of. And I
he's on pace to be the first hitter since Ted Williams to hit 400 in a season.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, I'm sure that'll stick.
Well, you saw the comparison they're making Astudillo to Ty Cobb, aren't you?
I saw Astudillo. Yeah, now they're comparing
him to the Georgia Peach.
Last year they couldn't find a catcher. Now we have an embarrassment of riches at catcher.
Too many.
We got three of them. So,
Ty Cobb might be the greatest ball player of all time, and now Astudillo is about to overtake
him. He may. I mean, certainly from a popularity standpoint, there's no comparison. But I'm anxious to see if one last thought about that.
Right.
If Baldelli would entertain the idea of moving Buxton to the leadoff spot, if he continues to get on base, you want a guy who's going to get on base and can fly like Buxton can, because he can set up a lineup a lot better in the number one spot than he can in number nine. And I'm anxious to see if he's going to make that move once this season progresses.
You're getting ripped.
For what?
Interleague play. There's an uneven amount of teams. So
I get that.
Team,
I'm talking about the early part of the season.
Well, some team has
I guess
to always
I know it. I know it. You're right.
It's old age. It's starting to sink into you. You're losing it.
I'm not just saying.
There always has to be a National League team playing.
Right. Like right now, it's Colorado's playing Tampa
there's
Bay.
More, is it more teams in the National League or more in the American League?
Yeah, you forget about that. You think it is even, and of course it's not.
I don't know how that works.
It's crazy. That's baseball.
You know how I'm going to count Detroit. I didn't and don't plan to protest at Bart Giamatti's office in New York about interleague play. But I always liked the idea that the American and National League never met till the World Series. I always thought that was fun.
I agree.
And again, I'm not saying that, you know, because that's the way they used to back in my days. But I liked that. It was one of the charms I liked about it. When they made the change, I said, why are they doing that? And they did, and that's fine. I don't care. But I liked it when they would never meet. No American League team would play a National League team until they got to the World Series.
Well, and now you still have the, and it's the National League will dig in because the American League will always be the junior league. The National League will always put its foot down and say, no DH. We're not going to have a DH. And look, you think about all the players, and I don't understand that at this point. I'm a traditionalist. I understand but I think there's still a lot of strategy involved. Plus the fact if you have players that are aging but can still hit the hell out of a baseball and you can't play them anywhere else, if I'm a fan, I'd like to see that person in my lineup, and you can't if you're in a National League team.
Yeah. So there is that. There is that being able to see, like, if Bryce Harper were to come to town. As long as he's playing in the National League, you'll never see him unless the Twins go to the World Series and, hell freezes over and all that. So there is that. And there would be fun. If you live in New York and you're a Yankees fan, to have the crosstown Mets come and vice versa.
It happens every year. White Sox, Cubs play every year.
And so I understand that. That does make it fun.
Right.
For those cities. One last break. More
to the Fan.
This is the major motion picture that. Where John Travolta became a household name.
Oh, he certainly did.
Didn't he start, was he in Welcome Back, Cotter?
Yes, he was.
And so he started in television, then he got cast in this piece.
This turned everything around.
Saturday Night Fever, and he became a major.
It's so funny.
Isn't he one of those Scientologist guys now?
Yeah, bizarre. I don't even go down that route. Tom Cruise and Travolta, and it just drives me nuts. But I guess to each your own. But,
And I remember, I always, even though this music was from the era I was growing up and really consuming new music and didn't particularly care for it then because I was Freebird!
I get it.
But I did. This was toe-tapping. I liked it. This is about 15 years ago. My wife and I stumble across a documentary about the Bee Gees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it. And not only did they play all of these, but people don't recall, they were big before the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever with
Correct.
Massachusetts, and I mean, just they have. I mean, just
they just hit a different level, with this movie. Yeah.
And as I'm watching it, I'm going, I'm not making this up. I go after the documentary was over. I go, God, I didn't realize how good they really were. I got up, got my car,
went to Best Buy and bought like a double CD of their. Oh, yeah, I just immediately got it and bought it. I had to go get it because they were that good. The Saturday Night Live Fever soundtrack is terrific.
I'm looking at Tana, how old are you?
39.
So you were, I mean, you don't remember the Vikings playing in the Super Bowl, right?
I've never seen it.
Yeah, you weren't alive.
No.
He doesn't remember Saturday Night Fever.
So what I'm saying is for people who missed the disco era, and that wasn't just the Bee Gees, it was Donna Summer. You go down the line, right? And it was, and disco got ripped for a thousand different ways, but it was toe tapping. It swept the country. Everyone was
that LP
into it.
Has one hit
one big
after
hit after another. Yeah, so I mean, you couldn't go through a summertime without listening to Donna Summer or the Bee Gees, and it wasn't embarrassing at the time. No, you didn't have to wear the jumpsuit and the out at Maximilian's on 494 Nicollet.
You were a big Maximilian's guy.
Well, I was more of a Chi-Chi's guy.
Okay.
Chi-Chi's and Maximilian's were side by side on the famous 494 strip made famous by Tommy Kramer and Scott Studwell, in that order, and pretty much anybody who played for the Vikings. And those stories, if those walls could talk, and I heard enough of them, I could have written a book about that.
Why didn't you?
Well, I don't know.
You got some time on your hands now.
I do now. Okay. I'd have to go back and talk to Tommy about it. And Scott may not want to talk about those days.
Let's take a phone call from Ryan. Ryan, you are on the Fan. What's up, me boy?
Hey, guys, I got a Twins question for
you. Sure.
Okay.
So Saturday, in the game the Twins lost, they're down 2-1 in the bottom of the ninth inning. They get that lucky double from Buxton. They didn't. Then Kepler was up, and he struck out. I know the Twins are like moving away from their style that they used to have with Gardenhire, like manufacturing runs and everything. But like, am I missing something? Why wouldn't they bunt Kepler in that situation? Is that part of Rocco's like new age deal, or just
think about that? In my defense, I was in Vegas on Saturday, so I didn't see the game. I heard about what happened, but so Buxton was on second base.
Yeah.
And well, I suppose with a left-handed hitter, you feel you don't have to bunt. You just hit a ball to the right side, hit a ground out. Buxton will be standing on third base easily. So I think that's the conventional thought, knowing what Baldelli said after the game.
The other question really became that I dreamt this, but I think I wrote this. There were some that thought, well, Kepler was 0 for whatever to that point, and why would you not pinch hit? And Baldelli's response was, and I think it was Baldelli, or, you know, again, maybe I'm making this up, but that we're too early in the year for guys in situations that I've got to let them build their confidence.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Second game of the year. Yeah. I would think you'd have to be pinch hitting for
your
leadoff hitter.
What happened?
Okay.
Well, what happened?
I don't know. Apparently they didn't score.
He didn't come through.
No, he did not.
He shouldn't be batting leadoff anyway.
Oh, that's what my point was. I think hopefully Sunday, sooner than later, Buxton will be.
Wild. Let's go there first. Yeah. Tenby and I got ripped for not being supportive enough of the club here because they still have a 0.0009%
supportive
chance.
Or just being realistic?
We should be excited. No, we're supposed to be excited.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
We've decided to lose for
Hughes. Cast. Yeah, I mean,
if we can get the number one pick overall, we could get Luke. What? No, it's his first name again.
Not Luke Hughes. Jack Hughes.
Jack Hughes. We could get Jack Hughes. So let's lose for Hughes. Let's lose. But he was saying this team is hard team to figure out. Wild.
I don't think it's a hard team to figure out at all.
Well, it's they have stretches where they've done this every year. They have stretches where maybe that just means they're mediocre. Maybe you have to figure it out. But sometimes they look like one of the better teams in the league. Things go well, and then they look awful. So I can't figure out why they...
Well, they have the worst home record in the Western Conference. That's pretty much all you need to know for a team that used to be so good at home. The die was cast in that two-week stretch, at least, when they could not score goals, could not win games at home. And if they did get in overtime, luckily enough, they'd probably lose either on 3-on-3 or in a shootout. So they weren't getting that extra point. But their lack of offense, it's not about effort. It's not like these guys aren't trying. It's not like they're not pushing hard. They just don't have the firepower. I talked to an NHL guy, as they say, they probably have three or four guys on that team right now playing every night that should be up in the press box as healthy scratches. So the talent pool is not...
Nice parachute, yeah.
No, it wasn't Parrish.
No.
But it
Parrish told you that, didn't he?
I just said it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's true. I mean, I think they're just...
Carly? Did Carly tell you?
Carly told me that, yes, exactly. Carly told me. Carly was giving birth at that time.
Could watch the game.
Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I think that sort of tells it. I mean, any Wild fan watching this team, and how many regulation goals have they scored now, even strength goals, in the last...
There's like three in the last...
10 games or something. It's just ridiculous. So that... It's not. They're not going to change their stripes, and so it's unfortunate because, you know, everyone looks forward to, you know, having, even though they've been short runs, Stanley Cup hockey is the best. It's fantastic. You know, the atmosphere outside the X, the weather gets warm, people are tailgating.
I think it's overrated. Let's
anyway. Thanks for asking.
No, but it's that the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's overrated.
Well, here's, it is when you don't win.
Here's for me though, it's the Wolves. Portland 132, Wolves 122.
Yeah, again.
Kent Youngblood does a story. Says, this has become a frustrating routine. Again, Monday, the Timberwolves dug an early hole, dug themselves out, but ultimately another loss.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Saunders says, feels like Groundhog Day right now. It does, and I'm disappointed. Goes on to say, since taking over for Tibbs, Saunders has stressed the positive, remained upbeat, and shielded away from strident criticism of his young team. But Monday, some of the frustration with the team's inconsistent defense came through. Here's what Saunders said. It hurts when you're stressing competing for four quarters. We can't use youth as an excuse, but you see a lot of time with young players, defense has to matter. It has to hurt when someone scores on you. You have to get to that point. We're going to use everything we have to move forward towards that, so we don't feel like this anymore. Think of how sad that is. And it's been my biggest complaint, mm-hmm. that I've been beating the drum forever, mm-hmm. about defense in the NBA. Right. There's no place they play less defense in the NBA, particularly with the young guys. It's because they never had to play defense when they were young, because their offensive skills were so good, the coach didn't care if they played. Every player in the NBA was his traveling team's leading scorer, his junior high team's leading scorer, his AAU team's leading scorer, his college team's leading scorer. So they get there and it's all about offense and slam dunk and shooting from the outside. And then everybody's this good. You have to play defense, and they don't want to and don't know how.
And
it's embarrassing.
I think that's the beauty of watching at least three, or not all, the teams are coming to the Final Four here this weekend. They're not... other than Michigan State, the glamour teams, the Blue Bloods, but you watch Texas Tech play defense, you watch Virginia play defense, and you'd be hard-pressed to say that maybe one of those players from either one of those teams will end up in the NBA next year.
Texas Tech is one of the best defensive teams.
That's what I'm saying. You watch them play defense. It is a joy to watch the way they collapse inside and don't give you an opportunity. That's the way you play defense. That's effort.
Not in the NBA. We'll just get it back on the other end of the floor. I got to go.
I get it.
I have to drink I have to drink my $9 Fiji water.
Yeah, it's sad, really, as you would say.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's Saunders says, I don't know if I want to say it's an effort thing, but it's in the realm.
No,
really, if it matters to you, you're going to put forth everything you have defensively. And that's the thing. It doesn't matter to them.
The NHL doesn't have. They have a lottery like the NBA, is just the worst record.
They do have a lottery, yes.
That changed recently? I don't remember them doing the lottery.
You don't know about lotteries. You don't know about balanced schedules.
No. I'm talking about the Wolves.
We already know you're a fraud.
It used to be that the team with the worst record got the number one pick.
That is the way it used to be.
Here's Carl Anthony Towns. What's the answer to better starts? Here's Big Meow. I don't know.
If I
knew, I'd fix it. I'm trying to find out myself.
Yeah.
And what it is, it's just, I'm telling you, it's a lack of effort to play defense by players that just don't want to play defense.
Well,
especially
this time of year.
Yeah, the season's over, it doesn't matter. And they're thinking about tee times or...
like, traveling.
Or like Tee Hut, he had the stress of both worlds. He had a rap career, a burgeoning rap career.
Right.
And his basketball career. These guys got other things to do, so...
Absolutely, they do.
But it's your favorite league.
It's not my favorite league.
Oh, it's not? Oh.
No.
All right.
I like leagues for the most part, I'm not gonna shy away from watching the NBA playoffs, especially as they go along. But I like leagues where players have to spend a lot of time in the minors. That's why I think the NHL in Major League Baseball for the most part. Those players have had to, for the most part, have had to play in the minors, pay their dues, take the bus rides. Other than,
you don't feel that way about television, though, do you?
No, not for me.
I didn't think so.
Any bus rides.
Didn't think so.
I'm done.
That's Mark Rosen.
You like the leagues where the owners control their service time so they can't get called up even though they're good enough to be on the team.
Mark Rosen, never spent a day in the minors.
Negativity.
Never spent a day in the minors. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you.
Talk to you again tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Timmy, thanks for having me.
Hey, great job.
Yeah, you did a bang-up job as well. We're back tomorrow at 12 noon. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for sharing part of it with us. Hang around. JG in for Big Ticket next.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Minnesota!
Good night, folks. Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Listen back to a podcast of today's show. Visit the Common Man channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.